Judges chapter number 2. Judges chapter number 2 and verse number 7 through 15 we read. We're familiar with the history of Israel and to this point. As you think about where we are in the history of Israel, by the time you get to Judges chapter 2, we're Exodus, and then of course all the 40 years in the wilderness, and then finally into the promised land. And then as we get here, we find out that Joshua has died. As a matter of fact, look at the end of the chapter. At the end of the chapter, let's see, where is it now? It's chapter 24 of Joshua. Okay, I'm reading two different things at the same time. Okay? Joshua chapter 24. And we find that verse number 29. And it came to pass after those things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. So Moses has led them out of the wilderness to the edge of the promised land. And now he can't go into the promised land because he smote the rock when he was supposed to speak to the rock. And he can see it from Mount Nebo. And he dies. The Bible says his eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. He died because of disobedience. And finally now, Joshua takes them into the promised land. They go over the Jordan River, another river, and God parts the river, and they go back, and they put 12 stones in the river. They take 12 stones out of the river. You remember that? And they've been living here in the promised land. They went to the first city where the walls fell down. You remember that? What was the name of that place? Jericho. Okay, and now they had houses that they didn't build. They had vineyards that they didn't plant, a land that flows with milk and honey. Did you ever wonder what that meant? I always used to wonder about all that. But so the cows, they'd milk the cows, and they milk, of course, we got that. And then the honey. So the bees would pollinate all the different trees, so there were full-grown trees and plants and all kinds of opportunities there. Everything was growing and thriving. And so this is a great, lush place where they went. And they've been living there now for a while. Joshua's led them over the Jordan, but something happened in verse number 7. Look there, there's a change. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. There is a change in leadership. You know, whenever there's a change in leadership, there's a danger. There's a danger in change of obedience. There's a danger in the way things have been done, that they're going to continue being done. There's a danger. So you think about the different leadership changes. You think about it in your life. There's a whole bunch. There's a nation that changed leadership. A home changes leadership. So a lot of different thoughts here. But now we find that those in the past, all the generation that knew the Lord died. Isn't that interesting? And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. Look at verse number 10. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. They died. And there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. The generation that knew the Lord died. All the people who saw with their eyes what God did died. All of the people who received great answers to their own prayers died. All the people who saw God do miraculous things firsthand died. Now think about that. Have you had God answer any incredible prayers? I mean, where you needed something that was absolutely impossible and God answered your prayer. You prayed. You said, God, I can't get this done. There's no way this is happening. It's impossible, but you can do it. And God answered your prayer. Many of us this evening have seen that. Many of us have seen God answer prayer. You know, miraculous things. When I talk about miraculous things, you're sitting in one. Miraculous things. I mean, how many of us have been up late at night? How many of us have spent so many years of our life praying for God to do the miraculous things and begging God to do miraculous things and watching God do miraculous things? And if we're not careful, another generation rises up and never has their prayers answered. They live off of someone else's answers to prayer. And they never see God do the miraculous things in answer to their life. They're reaping the benefits of someone else. And here's a sad verse 10. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers, and there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. How would you like to be of the generation, of any generation, that had no personal experience seeing God do the impossible? You know, that's a normal thing probably when you're young. When you're young, you don't see God do the impossible. You can't even really kind of comprehend it. But as you get a little older, you start getting a little, get two brain cells, you start rubbing them together, right? And then it grows into three. And pretty soon you're like, you know what? I'm pretty smart. And I can figure things out. And, you know, the most important thing you can figure out is who God is and what God can do. And as you grow up, don't be part of the generation that has someone else pray for you and has someone else get miracle answers for you and has someone else do God's work for you. Do it yourself. Generation without seeing God's miraculous deliverance. That's what it said. Here's the generation. Moses saw God's miraculous deliverance. He was part of it. God comes to Moses and says, Moses, I want you to go to Pharaoh and tell him, let my people go, that we may serve thee. Well, how do I know who you are? You know, Moses had a hard time talking, didn't he? He probably stuttered. But that's all, folks, right? Like Porky the Pig, right? And what was that? What's that joke? I can't tell that. It was a funny joke, but it's about cars. And I might get the wrong answer, okay? So he said, how do I know that you'll tell me? And he said, what's in your hand? A rod. He said, throw it down. He throws it down, and it turns into a serpent. And, you know, he probably went ahead, right? I'd look for a rake and kill that thing. And he said, now pick it up. And he probably said, well, wait a minute. I can't talk very good. Now I don't think I can hear very good either. Did you say pick it up? Yeah, pick it up. So he goes over and he picks it up. It turns into a rod again. He said, wow, that's a miraculous thing. He said, how am I going to know that you are the one who said, let my people go, that you're God? He said, put your hand inside your jacket there. He puts it in there, and he pulls it out, and it's leprous. Whoa, my hand has leprosy. Put it in your hand again. He puts it in there again, pulls it out. It's leprous. It's clean now, right? And so he says, listen, I'm the God who can do miraculous things. I'm the God who can do impossible things. I'm the God who's in control of everything. So he goes before Pharaoh, and he says, let my people go. And he says, well, how do I know who God is? There's a God for every day of the month. We got a flavor for every God around here, right? Just like ice cream. We got flavor for every God around here. And he says, okay. He said, here, boom. He throws down his rod and his snake, right? And he says, I'm not going to run. I picked him up last time. I can pick him up this time. And all the magicians, you want to hear a funny story? So this little kid has a spider, and every time he says to his spider, jump, the spider jumps, right? The daddy long legs. You ever see those things? He says, jump, and the spider jumps. Well, his brother didn't like it. So his brother came over, and he goes, you know what? You have that jumping spider. He pulls off all of his legs, right? And the little kid's going, ah, and he says, jump, jump, and the spider just sits there, and he goes, what do you know? He went deaf, too. Sorry. Anyway, where were we? Oh, the snake. So he throws the rod down. It turns into a snake. And Pharaoh's magician said, oh, we can do that too. You know, the devil's powerful. And they throw down their rods, and they turn into snakes. And Moses' snake eats up their snakes. What kind of snake is that? It's an anaconda, right? And it just eats up their snakes. And he got a big rod. He got a 2x4. They just pick it up. He goes, now let my people go, right? And he saw the miraculous. As he goes before Pharaoh, and they've been in slavery for centuries, bitter bondage and brick making for centuries, and yet a generation saw God deliver them from bondage. The cruel taskmasters, and finally the 10 plagues come on the Egyptians. The water turns to blood, and they find some clean water, the magicians do, and they say, well, that's good, we got a bottle of clean water here, look, hoochika. There I go, getting that gift again, right? It turns into blood. You only had the clean drinking water a little bit, and you turn that into blood. What are you, crazy? And then the frogs come, and the 10 different plagues at 10 different times, and they come to Pharaoh. When do you want the frogs gone? Tomorrow. How about yesterday? Okay, I don't know what his thinking was. And then lice, they had bus ministries in Egypt, didn't they? And so they had lice that came and infected everybody in Egypt. And they had flies, and they had murrain, a disease of the cattle, where the cattle, all the Egyptians' cattle died, and all the Hebrews' cattle didn't die. They had boils, broke out on their skin, and just horrible rashes on their skin. And the hail that came down mingled with fire, and the locust that ate everything that the hail didn't destroy, and the darkness that you could feel, and nobody went in or came out for 3 days. And then finally the Passover, where the blood of a lamb was on the doorpost and the lintels of the house, and the Lord passed over and slew everyone in Egypt that did not have the shed blood applied to their home, even in Pharaoh's house. Moses saw all that. A generation saw all that. 3.5 million, probably up to 3.5 million people leaving Egypt saw all that. They witnessed it firsthand. They were there. They experienced it every day. It was like, what's God going to do today? What's going to happen now? Boy, that's exciting when those kind of things happen. I remember we were going through some of those times here at our church, and Brother Jackson, you remember that? And Brother Cassidy would call me, and he'd say, what happened today? And I'd say, man, you're never going to believe what happened today. God did this, and God did that, and we were buying this building, and it was just like a miracle. Every day, it was just like dominoes falling down, like, what else is God going to do? Whoa, slow down, God. Well, time out. Give me a break. Too many blessings. Have you ever seen that firsthand? I don't want to just hear about it. The children of Israel said in the book of Psalms, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what great things you did in the past. I don't want to be one of those people. Read about the great revivals and read about the great, souls being saved and lives being changed, as lives being built and churches being growing. I don't want to read about that as part of history. I want to experience that as part of my life. And so do you. I don't want to read about God answering prayers for other people who are sick and they got better. I want them to answer those prayers for people that I know. I was going to say for myself, but I don't want to get sick, amen? But I want to see that happen for other people that I know. You want to see that happen in your life. I don't want you to get sick. And so the Red Sea is parted, and they are chased by Pharaoh's army. And Moses said, now what are we going to do? And God says, stand still and see the hand of the Lord. Boom, the Red Sea parts. They go across on dry land. And then they get to the other side. I suppose there's that one little kid where I'm going to put his finger in there, right? Can you imagine that? He's like fish swimming in there. He's like, I wonder if I put my finger in there. But they get to the other side, and here comes Pharaoh's army, and they're complaining, oh, no, Pharaoh's army, what are we going to do? And God says, watch this. And he gives them all a flat tire, and all the wheels fall off all of their chariots, right? And he says, okay, now have that water go back together. Bloosh, and they're all drowned. They saw that. They saw God destroy Pharaoh and his army. They saw the freedom that they got. Moses saw that. Joshua saw that. Their generation saw that. A generation lived to see God's miraculous deliverances. If you've ever seen that in your life, you know that God is a powerful God. But if you've never seen that in your life, don't be the generation that comes up after them, which knew not the Lord, nor the works which he had done. Number two, a generation without seeing God's leadership and protection now arose in the book of Judges, chapter 2. Moses had seen God's miracles and deliverance. Joshua had seen God's miracles and deliverance. Moses had seen God's leadership and God's protection. Joshua had seen God's leadership and God's protection. The elders, which lived after Joshua, had also seen it when they were young. 40 years traveling through the wilderness. Every day, a pillar of cloud shielded them from the hot sun. Every day, a pillar of cloud would protect them when they'd be out in the wilderness in their tents and walking around and doing business and traveling. For 40 years, a pillar of fire by night would give them warmth. A pillar of fire by night would protect them from the wild animals. A pillar of fire by night would protect them from enemies. For 40 years, God's presence was with them, and they saw it. Moses saw it. Joshua saw it. The generation of the elders who lived after Joshua saw it. But a new generation came up, and they never saw that. Never saw God's leadership and God's protection. All those who had seen all the great works of the Lord are gone. They all died. They all passed off the scene. I was mentioning this morning, hearing Dr. Tom Malone preach. Some of us have heard it many times. Dr. Tom Malone was one of those great godly men, those icons, those stalwarts, preached into his 90s. I remember one time my pastor, Brother Howells, was going to have him come to pastor school. And he had to get up and announce, Dr. Tom Malone can't come to pastor school. He retired a few years ago. He left his church in the hands of someone else. And they ran it into the ground. Well, he didn't say all that. That's the backstory. They ran it into the ground. And he had to go back and pastor his own church again and build it back up. And he couldn't come and preach to 8,000 people because he was out knocking on doors and winning souls to Christ in Pontiac, Michigan. That is a great man. But I get to hear him. I get to meet him. And others like him. And Lee Robertson. And others. Harold Seitler. And others. And you know, you could sit at your grandfather's feet and you could say, Grandpa, tell me what it was like back when God did stuff. Tell me what it was like back when God answered prayer. Wouldn't it be so much better if instead of hearing from your grandfather and your grandmother and your parents, if you found out for yourself that there's a God who can answer your prayer? There is a God who can answer your prayer. He's just as real as the God who answered your grandfather's prayer. There is a God who can send revival. We're praying for revival. What does revival mean? It means that something dead comes back to life. Sometimes we have things that are dead in our Christian life, in our spirituality. It needs to be coming back to life. God can send revival in our hearts. God can send revival in our community. God can send revival in our church. God can send revival in our families. I don't want to just hear about it. I want to see it. 40 years. God gave them leadership and protection. God helped them when they were helpless for 40 years. A generation saw it. Moses' generation saw it. Joshua's generation saw it. The elders that outlived Joshua saw it. Now the Bible says there arose another generation that never saw God's leadership and never saw God's protection. All those have passed off the scene. Generation arose after them who had no personal experience of God's miraculous deliverance as they were delivered from Egypt, of God's miraculous leadership and protection as they went through the wilderness. They had no experience of God's daily provision. God's daily provision. God provided for the children of Israel for 40 years in the wilderness. They could not go to Walmart and buy anything. I hate going to Walmart, but they have good prices, right? Go to Walmart, like the whole town is at Walmart. What's everybody doing at Walmart? Went to Walmart last week. I don't know what I had to buy. What did I have to buy? And I went to get in line, Brother Phil. And there's like the lines are like crazy. Like I said to the person there, I said, man, everybody in town went to Walmart. And the line's crazy. And so I got in line like this. And this lady goes, excuse me! And I'm like, whoa. And the line goes like back in between the shelving. Ever happened to you? I wasn't trying to jump the line, right? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. So I got to go back there. And then the guy in front of me, when I got to the register, he goes, oh, you only got one thing? He goes, you can go in front of me. I'm like, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And, you know, they couldn't go and buy stuff at the store. There wasn't a store. They didn't have a house. They lived in a tent. You know, some people like going camping. I don't like going camping. Get me home. You're going to go camping. You can have the tent. Tents are miserable. You wake up in the morning and you're all wet. You know, it's like, what? Who was thinking of that? Who thought that was a good idea? And here they are for 40 years. And God says, I'm going to take care of every need that you have. But some people have never seen that. Why? You don't have a need. Everything's been provided for you. You don't have to wonder, where is my meal coming from? Where is my health coming from? Listen, I'm glad we live in America. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. But we have it real easy. We're spoiled. Until you have prayed, give us this day our daily bread, and you don't have any bread, and God answers your prayer and gives you as much as you need. Not just a crust of bread, not just a crumb of bread, but like that man in Luke chapter 11, as much as you need. Friend, lend me 3 loaves. For a friend of mine in his journey has come to me and I have nothing to set before him. He says, trouble me not. And that man keeps knocking and knocking and knocking. And finally he says, listen, take a loaf, take 3 loaves, take the whole store here at 4 a.m. before you wake. Take all the wholesome bread you want. Get out of here. Take it all. But until you have never been hungry and found out that there is a God that can supply your daily need, you'll not know that God. And And another generation will go on and never find out that God can provide your daily bread. Another generation will arise which knew not the Lord. Another generation will arise which knew not his works. The generation of Joshua experienced God's daily provision. Every day, God said, I am going to feed you. Remember what they ate for every day? Manna. 40 years of manna. Can you imagine that? You ever see somebody who eats carrots? They get one of those juicers for Christmas, right? Hey, look at this. Look, here's 2 pounds of carrots. And they start drinking it. I never tried carrot juice. They say it's good. And here they are drinking carrot juice, right? And then you see them like a week later and they look orange. Like, what happened to you? You look like a Martian, man. You ever seen a Martian? They say they're green. I think they might be. Hey, look at that. What happened to you? Too orange? But can you imagine eating manna for 40 years? Can you imagine the Baptist Church cookbook? 365 ways to cook manna, right? Manna fried, manna baked, manna toasted, manna souffle, manna sushi, manna a la mode, manna, I don't know, barbecued manna, smoked manna. Hey, we got a new thing at church now. What are you smoking this week, right? It doesn't have anything to do with drugs. It's about pork, right? But 365 ways to cook manna. And so they're eating this manna every morning. Hey, what's for breakfast? Don't ask what's for breakfast. You know what's for breakfast. We've been eating it for 40 years. Manna. Okay, I'm sorry I asked. One day they wanted meat, right? We don't have any meat. God says, okay, I'll give you meat. I'll have quail. I love the Bible. It'll come out of your nostrils. You ever sneeze, you know, something comes out of you. Like, it's morbid, isn't it? He said, it'll come out of your nostrils. But God took care of them. Nobody died of starvation for 40 years. But a whole generation grew up and said, okay, we've seen God provide for our daily provisions. Have you seen God provide for your daily provisions? George Mueller did. He fed thousands of orphans in Bristol, England. Every day he prayed down that food. And every day God provided the food. You ought to read his biography. That'd do you a whole lot of good. It'd do you a whole lot of good from other stuff that's out there to read, that's for sure. Every day, they didn't have anything to drink. And God said, okay, Moses, I want you to go over. See that rock over there? He said, yeah, I see that rock over there. He said, take that rod and smite that rock. And he smote the rock, and water came gushing out of that rock. That's not the best part. For 40 years, they had water. And the Bible says that rock followed them. Can you see that? I was like, I saw that rock move. I know it moved. No, it didn't move. Okay. And for 40 years, they had water from a rock. God took care of their needs every day. Water from a rock. Manna. Hey, how about this one? Their shoes never wore out. Wow. I mean, listen, I love shoes. I have more shoes than my wife. Can you believe that? And I probably do. But I got rid of some of them. But man, shoes that don't wear out. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine leaving? They never wore out. They couldn't buy any shoes. Their shoes never wore out. Can you imagine leaving Egypt as a little baby and you got those little cute booties on, right? Those little tiny booties. 40 years later, you're like, hey, that's a size 11 triple E booty. That's really nice. Do they come in any other colors? Hey, shut up. I was little when we left and my shoes grew with my feet. Can you imagine that, Brother Tim? That'd be crazy, wouldn't it? Man, you better hope you had good shoes the day you left because you're going to be wearing them for 40 years. These shoes, I bought a pair of sandals the other day, like Jesus, and it took me a while to find them, and I had my old pair, and I'm like, I have a separation anxiety disorder. I've been wearing sandals for, I don't know, 3-4 years. Every time I go on vacation, I walk around in sandals, right? And my wife says, what are you going to do with the old ones? I'm like, I should throw them out. I should. That's why I have so many shoes. I can't throw them out. They're like mercury and fish. They just keep accumulating, right? And so finally, I put them. Did you notice what I did the other day? I put them on top of the garbage can. Did you see that? And that was a progression. Yeah, that was therapy for me. I put them on top of the garbage can outside. And then the next day, I was able to open a garbage can and throw them inside. And now I know where they are. I can still find them until Thursday morning. So, but can you imagine? God took care of them for 40 years. Their shoes never wore out. For 40 years. But that was really stylish, huh? Hey, where's the Nike? Never mind Mikey. Oh, Nike, we got Mikey. I don't know where those shoes are. And 40 years, shoes never wore out. For 40 years, their clothes never wore out. Boy, that'd be a bummer, ladies. You can't go shopping. I got to get a new outfit. Hey, I don't have to buy you an outfit for the next 40 years. That's a pretty good deal, isn't it? And so here they are, the whole generation. Man, they couldn't wait to get to the promised land. What's the first thing you're going to do in the promised land? I'm going shopping. All right, let's see, where's the mall? And so they had shoes that were taken care of. They had food that was taken care of. Their water was taken care of. Their clothes on their back never wore out for 40 years. Every need, every provision was always met on time. A generation saw that. Moses' generation saw that. Joshua's generation saw that. The elders that outlived Joshua saw that. They saw with their own eyes the great works of the Lord. But another generation arose. Did you see verse 10? Another generation arose after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. I don't want to be a part of that generation, no matter what generation it is. The baby boomers, right? The generation X, the millennials, the Zs, the Qs, the whatever they are. I don't want to be a part of that generation that doesn't see God work. I want God to work in my life. I want God to answer my prayer. I want God to meet my needs. I want God to speak to me when I read the Bible. I want that to happen to me. And you want that to happen to you. Have you personally, in answer to your prayer, seen God provide for you? I refuse to have a secondhand experience of a great God. I don't want someone else to tell me who God is and what God does. I want to see it myself. I don't want someone else to tell me that God answers prayer. I want God to answer my prayer. I don't want to hear about God's deliverance and God's protection and God's provision. I want to see it. There was a danger that came when the generation that knew the Lord and knew his works was gathered unto their fathers. And when they died, another generation that had never paid the price to know God. Think about it. That new generation that rose up had no burning bush experience. Moses is tending sheep on the backside of the desert, paying for his sin for 40 years. And all of a sudden he hears a voice, Moses! He goes over and he sees a bush that's on fire and he's watching. It probably wasn't unusual. But the bush is not consumed, and it keeps burning, and it keeps burning, and it doesn't ever go down. It doesn't diminish. And a voice comes out of the bush, and it says, take off your shoes. The place where you're standing is holy ground. And he takes off his shoes, and God is speaking to Moses. Oh, I know God doesn't speak to you in an audible voice, but God ought to speak to you through his word. Do you have any holy ground places where you tread? And God lets you know that you're on his radar screen. Another generation arose that had no burning bush experience. Joshua saw the unseen captain of the host, didn't he? He says, who are you? It was the Lord. Another generation arose that had no holy ground experience. Another generation arose with no miracles from heaven. Another generation arose with no mountaintop experience. Moses went up to Mount Sinai. Joshua, his minister, went up to Mount Sinai. And for 40 days, the voice of God was heard in the mountain. And the people below said it thundered. The fire of God was seen. And the finger of God wrote on tables of stone. Moses saw it. Joshua saw it. A generation that followed saw it. But there arose another generation that knew not the Lord. And knew not his works. They had no mountaintop experience. No presence of God. No fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. They had no glow of God on the face of the servant. You remember Moses went up and said, God, I want to see you. God said, I can't show you my face, but if you'll stay in the cleft of the rock, I'll put my hand over you. And God put his hand over Moses. And when Moses came down from the mountain, the Bible says his skin shone. Kind of like a light. It's like a what are those bugs? Oh, a firefly. No, it's a restaurant. Okay. Like a firefly. And here he was. He's glowing. And they said, Moses, you got to put a cloth over your face. You're blinding us. And yet another generation arose that never knew God and never saw the glory of God. They had never seen God's destruction of his enemies. The princes of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram rose up against Moses and his leadership. And Moses said, God, I want you to do something unusual that's never been done in the history of humankind before to get rid of these guys. And God said, okay. And the earth whoosh, opened up and swallowed 250 of them. And the fire of God came out and destroyed God's enemies. They saw that. You can read about it in Numbers 16 when you get home. The defeat of the Amalekites, as Moses stood upon a rock and held up his hands, and Joshua fought the battle, and Aaron stood on one side, and Hur stood on the other side. And as long as Moses' hands were held up, the people of God were winning the battle. And when his hands went down, they would start losing, and they pushed up his hands. And God gave them a great victory. The defeat of God's enemies. Instead, the sad statement is made twice. In the text that we read, they forsook the Lord. Instead of seeing God's miracles, they forsook the Lord. Instead of seeing God's answer to prayer, they forsook the Lord. Instead of walking with God and meeting with God, they forsook the Lord. And no tragedy followed. I can't help but think, look if you would at chapter 2. I can't help but think, as I read verse 14, that it looks like 2022, United States of America. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. And he delivered them into the hands of the spoilers that spoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. I think that's where we're headed if we don't smarten up. Here's the whole sermon in one sentence. I know I should have given it first, right? Every generation needs to know God personally. Every generation needs to know God personally. I need to know God personally. You need to know God personally. Mom, Dad, you need to know God personally, but your children need to know God personally. Your grandchildren need to know God personally. It's not just enough for old people to know God or young people to know God. Everybody needs to know God personally. Let me give you several thoughts and we're done. Number one, don't just know about God, know God. You know, we can know all about God. We can state all the statistics and read about it in the Bible. It says, well, I know who God. I can write you a paper about God. I can write a paragraph about God. I can write you what somebody told me about God or what the Bible might say about God. But do you know God personally? Does God know you? God ought to know your name. God ought to hear from you often, all the time. Do you see the difference between knowing about God and knowing God? We could get a biographical sketch of a person, but that's not anything like knowing them. Information is not knowing God. We know God by spending time in His Word. This book right here is the mind of God. You want to know God? Get in the Bible. You want to know God? Start reading the Bible. Read it in the morning. Read it in the afternoon. Read it at night. Read it before you go to bed. You'll get to know God. We know God by spending time in His Word. We'll know His will and His wishes by spending time in His Word. We know God by spending time in prayer on our face, alone with God. You know, we don't spend enough time alone. Probably some people they have their TV at home when they're not even there. I mean, if they shut their TV off, their parakeet would die because it's never been quiet in the house. You'd be like, oh, no, what happened? Verse number 7. Chapter 2, verse number 7. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. I said, number 1, don't just know about God, know God. Number 2, the generation that knew God served God. Part of walking with God is serving God. The Bible says, wait on the Lord. You know, we're pretty good at saying, okay, I'm just going to wait on the Lord. So maybe we go get a chair, right? And I'm just going to wait on the Lord. Matter of fact, it's more comfortable if I put my feet up. I'm just going to sit here. I'm just going to wait on the Lord. And I'm just going to wait and wait. And I'm just going to wait till the rapture happens. I'm just going to be sitting here in my chair. And when the Lord comes to take me home, I'm just going to be sitting on my blessed assurance. Here I am, waiting on the Lord. I'm waiting. Nothing happened. This is great. I can just hang out. And it's air conditioned. That feels pretty good. I'll probably fall asleep here after a while, right? I'm going to wait on the Lord. No, waiting on the Lord is like when you go to a restaurant. You go to a restaurant, and the person comes up, and they said, "Hi, I'll be your waiter." Right? It always bothered me when a guy works at a restaurant, right? Guys should be back there cooking the food or something, doing dishes. Hope we don't have any waiters here, right? I just couldn't be one, all right? You can be one. Waitresses are great. A waiter, I don't know. Do something else. Somebody's got to do it, right? So, "Hi, I'll be your waiter tonight. Can I get you something to drink? Would you like another cup of coffee? Can I top off your water, right? Can I get you, what's your favorite thing to drink?" Okay, all right. Moxie. It wasn't alcohol, right? Moxie. She's from Maine, right? She's like, "So, we don't serve that here. Can I see your driver's license, all right?" You're over 18. Moxie. Who likes Moxie? Anybody? Brother Keith, how you doing? Really, that many people like Moxie? Oof, it tastes like carbonated molasses, all right? Hold your nose, drink it. Moxie. All right, I picked the wrong person. Sorry. So I come over here and ask Mrs. Smith. All right, so Moxie, a cup of coffee, cup of water. I said, and then come back. And I try not to get on her nerves too much, but I say, "Hey, did you check out the menu? Would you like an appetizer? Did you see the soup of the day? It's French onion soup. You'd like that? And we have escargot, and those are snails. And we have French fried mushrooms. And, you know, we have sirloin steak as a special today. And so can I get you anything else?" A waiter comes by and waits on you and wants to meet your needs, right? And that's why you tip them 20% when you leave a gospel tract from Gospel Baptist Church, right? Otherwise, leave it from some other church, right? No, it's okay. So you come by, and you constantly check, "Hey, can I get you anything else? How is that salad dressing, right?" And you don't bug them too much, but you want to make sure that if they have something, they shouldn't be over there waving their napkin like, "Hello, does anybody work here?" "Yeah, we're experiencing a help shortage," right? My wife and I went out to eat yesterday. Thanks for the gift card. I finally used it. It was about 2 years old, but it was still good. And it was good. The steak was a little overdone. Christian, you like it well done, right? You could have had my steak. You would have loved it. It's like eating the tongue off your shoe. But it was okay. It was supposed to be medium well. But it was good. But we had a good waitress, and she came over and checked, make sure everything was. That's what we do waiting on God. "Hey, can I get you anything? Do you need anything? Is there anything you'd like? Would you like more of something?" We got to come to God and wait on God like a waiter or a waitress waits on a customer in a restaurant. "Hello, God. I am going to be your waiter. I am going to be your waitress," if you're a lady, right? "I'm going to be your waiter. What can I get you? How can I help you? How can I meet any need that you want on this planet? Call on me first. I'm ready." That's how you wait on God. Boy, if you're going to wait on God like that, do you think God's going to say, "Huh, I got something to do, and here you are"? You ever see somebody picking songs on Wednesday night? Woo! Like, "Hey, I'm over here," right? Standing up on the pew like, "Pick me up. Oh, we didn't notice you," right? You bring a mannequin with you, like you got four hands going up. "Yay, pick me," right? "Here I am," right? And we should do the same thing waiting on God. "God, I'm up here. I'm on top of the chair. I'm jumping up and down on the roof of my house. Hey, if you need something done, call me first." You think God's going to say, "I don't know who to call. I'll declare. Nobody wants to do anything down there. Look, I got a red dot on top of my house. This is the guy. Bullseye. Right here, I got one of those glow sticks that you call in ordnance, right? And I snapped that thing and threw it on the roof of my house and send the artillery right here. These are the coordinates. Hit me first. I want to get busy for God." That'll be how we wait on God. You know, that would just do God. God would have a really happy day if we did that. The generation that knew God, verse 7, served God, because walking with God is serving him. You know, can I say this? I think I will anyway. We all serve someone. Show me how you spend your time, I'll show you who you serve. We all serve someone. The generation of Joshua and the elders that outlived Joshua served God and knew his works. The next generation arose. Here's the digression. Look at verse 10 again. "And all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them which knew not the Lord, nor his works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers that brought them out of the land of Egypt and followed other gods of the gods of the people that were round about them and bowed themselves unto them and provoked the Lord to anger. And they forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroth. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of those spoilers that spoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand after their enemies. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. Do you see like a downward digression in each one of those verses? They decided, no, we're not going to know God. I don't know God personally. God's not answering my prayers personally because I'm not praying to him. They didn't know his works. They'd never begged God for provisions. Verse 10, they did evil. There was no personal holiness in their lives. They didn't care about pleasing God with their living and their talking and their activities and everything that they did. They said, no, I'm just going to please myself. They served Balaam, a pagan symbolism of God. God was displeased and God was displaced. Something else filled that place. You know, you have a place in your heart that only God can fill. And when you fill it with something else, there's no room for God. And that becomes an idol. They served Baal and Ashtaroth. Verse 13. You read the history of Israel. They sacrificed their own children. They provoked the Lord to anger. Verse 12. And God was angry with them, and he judged them. Verse 14 and 15. Here's the last thought, and here's the question I'm going to ask you. First, don't just know about God. Know God. Number two, the second, the generation that followed, the generation that knew God, served God. Number three, do you have a stone in Shechem? I know it's a funny question. Look back to Judges chapter 24, or Joshua chapter 24. Joshua chapter 24. Joshua comes to the children of Israel. Remember he said, listen, Moses has passed off the scene. I am going to pass off the scene. He died in the same chapter. And he says, now you got to make a choice. A lot of the children of Israel are worshiping idols. And he said, you got to make a choice. Look at verse 15. It's a familiar verse. You know it. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That's not just a slogan at Hobby Lobby, okay? That ought to be something that you live in your character and your godliness and your daily life. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua said, I'm serving the Lord. You just mark it down. I'm serving the Lord. And the next generation came, and they had a decision to make. And as you read chapter 24, Joshua said, okay, what are you going to do? And they said, oh, we're going to serve the Lord too. And he said, all right. And he brought him to an oak tree, and he took this big giant stone. It's right there in chapter 24. He took this big giant stone, and they rolled it under the oak tree. And he said, the name of this stone is called Shechem. And they said, we're going to write this down in the book of the Lord. And we're going to make a record, and this stone is going to be a witness unto you that you said you're going to serve God. So every time they walked by the oak tree, they saw that stone. You know what they said? Oh, yeah, I remember that day I stood in front of that big giant stone called Shechem. And I said, I am going to serve the Lord. You know, waymarks and things that are an altar, right? Didn't Jacob come back to an altar many times when he came back to Bethel? There was a place where he met God. And every time he came back, he said, hey, that's where I met God. And he got right with God every time he came back there. They came to the Jordan River. They took 12 stones, and they put them in Gilgal. And Joshua said, every time you come to this town, I want you to see this pile of rocks, and your children are going to say, what mean these stones? And you're going to say, those stones used to be in the middle of the Jordan River, and God parted the Jordan River, and we left the wilderness after we left Egypt, and God brought us here. We have a great God. And he said to the next generation, you need a stone too. And your stone is called Shechem. And every time you walk by this oak tree, that lives a long time, by the way, there's going to be a stone that never dies. And every time you see that stone, you're going to remember, hey, the word Shechem, would you like to know what it means? Come back next week. The word Shechem means shoulder. You say, now, why is that significant? Here is the significance of the name Shechem. Joshua said to all of Israel, hey, I've served God. Moses served God. A generation served God. Here we are. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What are you going to do? And they said, oh, we're going to serve God too. He says, all right, come over to this stone and tell me that right here. We're going to serve the Lord. Okay, here's the book of the Lord. We're going to serve God. I'm going to write it down. We're going to serve God. Hey, the stone is called Shechem. It means to shoulder, because here's what that means. It doesn't mean that something is thrust upon you. You ever have to shoulder something and you weren't ready for it, or you didn't really appreciate it, or now I'm stuck with it? It means this: to rise early, to make an early start, to take responsibility and rise voluntarily, to dedicate yourself to do right rather than having it forced upon you. Joshua said, here's the stone, Shechem. He said, choose you this day whom you will serve. You can serve the gods that your fathers served on the other side of the flood. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now it's your choice. The ball's in your court. And they said, oh, we're going to serve God too. He said, all right, here's a stone. Tell it to the rock, right? Tell it to the stone. We're going to write it down. Shechem, shoulder it. You took this on your shoulder. You said, okay, I'm going to take serving God on my own shoulder. I am going to carry the burden on my own shoulder. Nobody put it on me. I'm taking it myself. And that's the best way to serve God.